Hi guys, Kira from Murder and More here. I am the solo host of the UK-based True Crime podcast, where each Sunday I tell you about a murder, disappearance, or serial killer, and I even have a conspiracy theory thrown in there. You can find us on Twitter at Murder and More, or head over to our website www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com to find out more.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of It's Murder Up North, the podcast that explores murders and crimes that occurred in the north of England. Please check out the podcast that played at the beginning of this episode. Kira is absolutely adorable and I sincerely hope her podcast does well. Before I head to the episode, don't forget you can follow me on Twitter and on Facebook. I have just launched a Patreon page. I'm still working on some of the exclusives for anyone who signs up. I will, however, offer anyone who signs up the opportunity to get a personal mention on the show. Now, let's head to the episode. Please be advised, this episode does have content that some may find distressing. As always, listener discretion is advised and it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 13. As the sun rose over the Pennines, the people in the sleepy town of Bacup were starting their day. It was a pleasant summer's morning in the close-knit community, which nestles between Rosendale and Rochdale in the Rubble Valley. At the heart of the town sits Stubby Lee Park, with woodland trails, riverside paths, a skate park and a children's play area. It was the ideal place to spend a lazy summer's day. The park was usually bustling with the sound of children playing, while runners and dog walkers pounded the paths. On Saturday the 11th of August 2007, an eerie silence filled the park. Figures in white combed the fields. Yellow tape cordoned off the park and police cars blocked the paths. This was one of three terrifying calls made to the emergency services at roughly 1 a.m. that morning. The caller was just 12 years old. She was witnessing a horrific attack which could be heard in the background of the call. In the harsh sunlight, investigators were able to see the true horror of what had occurred earlier that morning. At first glance, you'd be forgiven for thinking it had been the scene of a party, with disposed beer cans, drinks bottles and cigarette butts. However, on closer inspection, a more sinister story was told. A black rucksack laid on the ground, its contents strewn carelessly. Clumps of thick black hair were scattered about the skate park, and two dark red stains marked the grey concrete. It was a scene of unimaginable horror. In the early hours of that Saturday morning, a young couple had been viciously attacked and left for dead. Sophie Lancaster and Robert Maltby were 20 years old. They'd recently moved to the town of Bacup, living in a small flat above a shop in the town centre. A flat they had lovingly decorated in their own style. It wasn't much, but it was their first home together. Place they were starting their lives. Within the flat, they shared their hopes and dreams, their loves and fears. They'd met at college and bonded over their shared interests. They loved the same music, they were both very creative. He loved to paint and she loved to write. Everyone who knew them described the couple as true soulmates. They were just meant to be together. On the night of the 10th of August, the couple had been spending time at a friend's house. They had headed home at about 11:40 p.m. As they had very little money and it was a warm summer's night, the couple chose to walk the 2 miles home. They took a slight detour, deciding to stop at a petrol station for cigarettes. While in the shop, Sophie got into a conversation with a group of teenagers, one of whom she'd met previously. They chatted for a while, and the group invited the couple to join them at the local park, where they were going to hang out and drink. The group were filled with friendly banter as they entered Stubbley Park, making their way to the skate park where 30 or more teenagers were already gathered. Like many small towns, there wasn't a lot for young people to do in Bacup, so hanging out in the park was a favoured option. They could just chill out and be themselves, without the worry of people taking offence to their presence. Sophie and Rob were warmly received by those gathered. They were offered a drink and shared cigarettes. They posed for photos with some of the teens, and they were just having a good time. The friendly atmosphere changed with the arrival of 5 teenage boys. They were fired up and looking for trouble. They seemed to be goading each other in muted voices. One witness overheard someone say, "He needs a smack." Another added, "Go on, him." Before anyone knew what was happening, Rob was punched in the face by one of the lads. Stunned, he stumbled back and wiped the blood that began to pour from his nose away. "Do you think that's funny?" One of the gang smirked as he struck Rob. This blow knocked him to the ground, and in that instant, he was viciously set upon, a barrage of kicks and punches to his head and body. The gang acted like a pack of wild animals as they attacked the defenceless man. Witnesses shouted at the gang to stop. Some tried to pull them away. Some ran in fear, and others stood, stunned, unsure what to do. The vile group stepped away from Rob, laughing and gloating as he lay motionless. Sophie knelt beside him, cradling his head on her lap, his blood covering her pale fingers. She shouted for help. She pleaded and begged for Rob to wake up. 4 days after the attack, Rob woke from a coma in the hospital. His eyes were swollen shut, his face bruised and battered. He had suffered a bleed to the brain, and it was too early to know the full extent of the damage caused. His mother was by his side. She held his hand tightly as he asked where Sophie was. She told him that Sophie was in another hospital, but Rob didn't know why, and he didn't seem to understand. He couldn't recall anything of that night. Sophie lay in a hospital bed in intensive care, surrounded by the noise of beeping machines, wires and tubes. Her porcelain skin was purple and black with bruises, her face swollen beyond recognition. Strange marks scarred her cheeks. Tufts of hair were missing, revealing her scalp. She was in a deep coma, all because of a senseless and brutal act. After Rob had been attacked, while Sophie was cradling his head, she refused to move. The gang shouted at her to get out the way, but she stayed at Rob's side, shielding him from them. When suddenly a volley kick struck her in the head, she fell backwards, her head hitting the ground with such force it rendered her unconscious. But that did not stop these vile animals, who continued to kick and stamp and jump on her head and face. What had Sophie and Rob done to deserve such a horrific assault? This was a question that baffled the police. They could see no reason for why this young couple had been attacked. The police investigation was hampered by a wall of silence. Some of the people on the park that night were just 12 years old. Frightened by what they saw and what might happen to them if they spoke up against the perpetrators, seasoned detectives struggled to get answers, so a decision was made to turn to new police recruits, who, though inexperienced in the art of interrogation, they were closer in age and were more relatable. During the investigation, door-to-door inquiries were conducted. The police traced Rob and Sophie's movements that night and hoped that CCTV would give them a break in the case. But in a cruel twist, none of the cameras at the petrol station or along the route were operational that night. Disappointed, the police persisted. Someone in the close-knit community must know something. Slowly, the tactic of using younger officers began to pay off, and the police began to build a picture of what happened. Witnesses began to disclose names, and slowly, the same five names were mentioned over and over again. They were brothers, Joseph and Danny Hume, Daniel Mallett, Ryan Herbert, and Brendan Harris. They struck fear in Bear Cub. Herbert and Harris were known to be members of a gang who had been terrorising the community. When they were brought in for questioning, two of them confessed to assaulting Bob, but none of them would admit to the attack on Sophie. All five were charged with grievous bodily harm. 13 days after the attack, this charge was changed to murder. Sophie never regained consciousness. She never woke from her coma. Her swelling had subsided, her petite features began to shine through, but there was no brain activity. Her family made the difficult decision to turn off the life support machines. Her friends came to say their goodbyes, and Rob, although still very ill and recovering, visited her and kissed his soulmate one last time. Sophie Lancaster was born on the 26th of November 1986. A chubby little baby with a full head of hair, she was a pretty little girl with pale skin and crystal blue eyes. From an early age, she marched to the beat of her own drum. At 6 years old, she'd already decided she was going to be a vegetarian. Sophie was quiet. She could be so shy, yet also sociable and friendly. She loved being around others. But she was just as happy on her own with a book. She loved reading Harry Potter and listening to music. But she also cared about social issues such as poverty and inequality. As she got to her teens, this kind, caring girl chose to express who she was through her clothing. She was a romantic and creative soul. This creativity was expressed in her writing. It was her special gift. At the time of the attack, she was on a gap year, but planned to study a degree in English at Accrington Rosendale College. When she met Rob at school 3 years earlier, she found a kindred spirit. They shared so much in common, and both had chosen to express themselves through their clothing. They were labelled as goths, but behind the piercings, dreadlocks and dark clothing, they were so much more than just a label. They were a young couple in love, planning a future together. Friends and family described them as intelligent and a wonderful couple to be around. They were indeed soulmates. In the small town of Bear Cub, the couple stood out for their appearance. People would make comments, and on a number of occasions, the couple were verbally abused. Rob had been physically attacked previously, and for a few weeks afterwards, he was unable to leave the sanctuary of their flat. It was Sophie's courage and her belief in the goodness of others that helped him through this. But surely, their clothing could not have been the reason they were attacked. After all, it's just clothes. Sadly, all across the UK, people are attacked because they are different, misunderstood, or just because of someone else's prejudice. Between 2018 and 2019, 103,379 hate crimes were recorded. The CPS classifies a hate crime as a range of criminal behaviour where the perpetrator is motivated by hostility or demonstrates hostility towards the victim's disability, race, religion, sexual orientation, or transgender identity. During the investigation prior to Sophie's death, the police took the unusual step of having a pathologist examine her injuries before they faded. From the marks on her face and the extent of her injuries, he concluded that two or more people had been responsible. This was corroborated by witnesses who stated that two members of the gang had attacked Sophie. However, all five denied any involvement. Forensic evidence helped them determine who the culprits were. Both were known to the police. Ryan Herbert and Brendan Harris had been convicted of affray after a similar attack on a 16-year-old boy near to Stubbley Park 4 months earlier. He too was kicked and stomped about the head. Fortunately, on that occasion, the boy's mother intervened. His attackers were sentenced to 6 months community service. Just 120 days later, Brendan Harris and Ryan Herbert would attack Rob and Sophie. It could have been so different. If they had been imprisoned for the attack on the teenage boy, they wouldn't have been in the park that night for a start. But as always, we are blessed with hindsight. During the questioning, the two boys turned on each other, and a lot of Ryan Herbert's responses were simply no comment. Ryan didn't need to say anything. His clothing from that night told the police everything they needed to know. His trousers and shoes were stained with Sophie's blood. They found traces of her DNA embedded deep in the sole of his trainers. This was deemed to have been from the force of him jumping on Sophie's head. While in custody, he incriminated himself further. During a phone call to his mother, which unbeknownst to him was being recorded, his mum told him he had nothing to worry about, as he had nothing to do with what happened to Sophie. To which he responded coldly, "But I did." During transportation to the courts, the prison van was bugged. This allowed police to overhear a conversation between the two mindless idiots, as they discussed how they kicked Sophie's head like a football. It was determined that Brendan Harris had been the first to punch Rob. This action started the chain of events that led to Sophie's murder. Witness statements also implicated him in the attack of Sophie, despite there being little physical evidence to confirm this. Trial started in March 2008. All five were being tried for the attack on Rob, and under joint enterprise for the murder of Sophie. The trial started on March the 10th at Preston Crown Court. Ryan Herbert pleaded guilty to the murder of Sophie. This had huge implications as it weakened the Crown prosecution's case against the others. Daniel Mallett, Joseph and Danny Hume had the charges against them reduced to just grievous bodily harm for the attack on Rob, and were ultimately sentenced to between 4 to 6 years each. Brendan Harris pleaded not guilty to the murder of Sophie Lancaster, and this meant that her family would have to endure the trauma of the courtroom. They were forced to listen to the testimonies of those who were there that night, reliving their daughter's last moments. Witnesses testified that they saw Harris and Herbert running at Sophie and kicking her, jumping on her. They recalled how the pair delighted in their actions and gloated later, quoting, "We've just beaten someone up. There's two moshes nearly dead at Bakewood Park. You want to see them? They're a right mess." The judge praised the actions of the witnesses. Although some of them ran away and others stood and watched, some took action. They tried to stop the attack. They called the emergency services and they tried to administer first aid, removing their own clothing to try and slow the bleeding. If it wasn't for the brave actions of these young people, it is possible that both Rob and Sophie would have died in the park that night. The judge also praised them for their courage in coming forward and testifying. Their actions were the complete opposite to the cowards who stood in the dock. Could you have done what these witnesses did at 12 years old? I once had to testify as a witness, but it was just in front of a judge and a couple of lawyers. I was petrified. I truly commend the courage and actions of these young people. Three of the 999 calls were played to the court. In the background of one of the calls, the court were able to hear the attack. They could hear the pleas of the witnesses, and they could hear Rob gasping for breath. They could also hear the maniacal laughter and jeering of the perpetrators. It took 17 minutes from the first call being placed to the arrival of the emergency services. The first responders described to the court the sight that greeted them. They highlighted that it was pitch black, and this made it hard to administer first aid. But they were also appalled at the extent of the injuries the couple had sustained. One description stands out. They stated that initially they could not tell the gender of the victims. They were so brutalised. Rob's friends provided sickening testimony. The defendants had stolen Rob's mobile phone during the attack, and in a despicable act, they proceeded to call his contacts, telling them that Rob was dead in a park. After deliberation, the jury of 9 men and 3 women found Harris guilty of grievous bodily harm and guilty of murder. He received a life sentence with a minimum term of 18 years. Ryan Herbert received a shorter sentence due to an appeal taking into account his guilty plea. He received life with a minimum term of 15 years. So what made these boys into killers? Was it as simple as they attacked Robert Maltby and Sophie Lancaster because they were different? Because they were moshers? The irony is, Robert was dressed in blue jeans and a green hoodie, and Sophie's red and black braids and piercings were the only thing that differentiated her and Rob from the others in the park that night. It is argued that Herbert and Harris were used to being the centre of attention. They were members of a gang. They even posted a rap video online. Had Sophie and Rob stepped on their turf and they didn't like the attention they were getting? The judge described the boys' actions as a hate crime. This decision was down to his discretion. Due to the age of the defendants, they would have received more lenient sentences if he had not identified it as an act of hatred. In her statement after the conclusion of the trial, Sylvia Lancaster and others voiced their concerns that this wasn't just an isolated case. People are victims of hate crimes every day in the UK, and it is an issue with our society that needs addressing. The 3 boys who participated in the attack on Robert Maltby, I believe, did so out of peer pressure. I don't personally think they would have acted without the pressure of feeling part of a gang. I'm no way defending their actions, however, they have served their sentences. They would have been released by 2015 and I can find no further information regarding them. I sincerely hope that all 3 have been rehabilitated and are integral parts of society and law-abiding citizens. Ryan Herbert grew up in a one-parent household with his mum and sister. They lived in a rundown part of Bacup and his mum worked in a local shoe factory. Being a single parent trying to balance work and home life is never easy. Ryan was also autistic and had learning difficulties, which would have made things more difficult. By the age of 13, Ryan had started drinking alcohol and doing drugs. He would loiter on the streets of the town and became a member of the gang known as the Bacup Crew. He craved the attention and the approval of his peers. Prior to his attack on the couple, he had been bragging about having sex with a young girl and taking her virginity. After his incarceration, Ryan received at least 15 adjudications in his first 5 years in prison. The most serious of these was in 2009, when Herbert kicked and punched a fellow inmate in the head before going on to assault a member of staff. However, it is claimed that after 2012, he has started to show signs of change. He was described as a positive young man who was hardworking with a full-time job in the institution. He has also apparently taken GCSEs in maths and business studies, and started the first year of an open university degree in social sciences. Brendan Harris also wanted to fit in. He claimed he had been drunk and was showing off when he attacked Rob and Sophie. He lived with his mother and father, but like Herbert, he came from a deprived area of the town. He too ended up spending most of his time congregating on the streets and in the parks. He has also been in trouble since his incarceration. Harris has had his life sentence extended by 4 months, after assaulting a nurse and threatening to kill another member of staff at a hospital. He has since been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. Bacup is a close-knit and quiet town where crime was minimal, but it wasn't without its issues. If you looked beyond the facade of the historic little high street filled with independent shops and the town's fame as a location for numerous TV series, such as Hetty Winthrop Investigates. It features Mrs. Bucket, I mean Bouquet, herself, Patricia Rutledge, and a very young Dominic Monaghan, pre-Lost and Lord of the Rings days. It also forms the backdrop for the dark yet seriously funny League of Gentlemen, with the infamous saying, "This is a local town for local people." It was a town like many others that were left behind when the main industries closed and unemployment rose. This environment breeds contempt and a feeling of being excluded. Children growing up in the more deprived groups of society are sadly more likely to turn to crime and have little respect for others. This isn't to say that there aren't some who strive to do something with their lives, but sadly they face an uphill battle. Following the verdict, Detective Superintendent Mike Gradwell of Lancashire Police condemned the appalling behaviour of the parents for failing to instil any discipline or respect for life in their sons. He went on to state, and I quote, "We have to be critical of the parents in this case. Their attitude when their sons were arrested and for letting them out into the early hours to go and commit this sort of violence." He continued, "There is a total lack of parental responsibility. I don't think they have taken completely seriously how repulsive this incident was." He highlighted that during the police interviews, Harris and his mother were taking the matter very lightly, and they were sniggering during some of the evidence. It was as if they didn't care. They were almost laughing and joking about what they had done. Their attitude seemed to be that the only thing their sons had done wrong was get caught. I am sure I am not alone in questioning what kids as young as 12 were doing out at 1 a.m. When I was that age, I lived in a small village with nothing to do. The nearest cinema and shopping centre was 10 miles away by a bus that only ran once an hour. So it's normal to see teens hanging around on the parks. But our parents always wanted to know where we were, who we were with, and we had to be home when the streetlights came on. My parents instilled in me a need to be respectful towards others. They encouraged me to be a part of the community and to accept everyone, no matter what. Sothy's death changed many lives. The teenagers who witnessed the traumatic events that occurred that night, I doubt they will ever shake the memories of what they saw. And Sophie's brother, who lost his little sister and had to break the news to his mother that her daughter had been the victim of a vicious attack. Robert Maltby has never fully recovered from his injuries. He found it hard to adjust to life without Sophie. He withdrew from the world and his friends, staying in the safety of his home, away from the memories and the looks of sympathy, finding solace in his art. He was afraid to step outside. He moved back in with his parents, who lived just 5 minutes away from Stubbley Park. But his family home gave him the security he needed to recover. His mother spoke about her regret that night. Her son and his girlfriend were fighting for their lives so close to where she was, and she didn't know. She wasn't there to protect her child. Speaking about his life with Sophie, Rob said, quote, "She was my entire world. Everything I was doing outside being around Sophie was really just to make it so we could have a decent life together. And just when we tried that hard, we have put in so much effort, some child comes along and decides to ruin it all for you. It's just not fair." Robert has found the strength to continue. Before the attack, he was studying art illustration at university. And 10 years later, he achieved his degree. He says he still sees the good in people. However, he believes the attack on Sophie has been oversimplified. I quote, "It was always like Sophie was killed because she was a goth. No, she was killed because some arsehole killed her. Why can't we ask what it is about them that made them want to murder someone? Not what it is about someone that made them be murdered." Sylvia and John Lancaster chose to celebrate Sophie's life through a humanist funeral ceremony. She was surrounded by over 300 people. Her body was laid to rest in a white coffin, on which her friends and family wrote messages of love. And in a special tribute to his daughter, her father John had Sophie's image tattooed on his chest. I personally think Sophie's mother is an amazing woman. She had to witness what no mother should. She had to see her beautiful, intelligent daughter lying in a hospital bed, beaten beyond recognition, connected to so many monitors and tubes that she couldn't hold her. Sylvia then had to make the heartbreaking decision to switch off the life support machine, letting go of all her hopes and dreams for her child's future. However, Sylvia was adamant that some good should come from Sophie's death, and she established the Sophie Lancaster Foundation, which fights to stamp out prejudice, hate, intolerance everywhere. The foundation works with schools to change people's attitudes towards others, working with the next generation to hopefully create a more tolerant future. Sylvia also fought for Sophie's Law, which helped redefine what is deemed a hate crime, to cover people from subcultures who are attacked for their appearance and lifestyle. Many police forces now have a zero-tolerance approach, including Lancashire Police. For her work in promoting positive attitudes towards diversity, with the aim to reduce hate crimes, through the Sophie Lancaster Foundation and her fight for a change in the law, Sylvia Lancaster was awarded an MBE. Question is, can we change everyone? I was disgusted to learn that Harris and Herbert showed complete disregard for what they had done. What sickened me more was the actions of Harris's family. They laughed, jeered, and were completely disrespectful, not only to the court and law enforcement, but to Sophie's family and friends. This lack of compassion and disregard for the consequences of the defendant's actions only shows how ignorant they are. The time-old argument of nature versus nurture is brought to play with this case. I personally think that if Harris's family are his role models, they played a big part in what he became. I don't want to use the word nurture because that would suggest caring, looking after others. So no, they did not nurture him, but they did contribute to his attitude towards other people. It is stated that Rob and Sophie were attacked for being different. But personally, I agree with Robert Maltby. That simplifies the bigger issues at play. Rob and Sophie were attacked for being themselves, and two mindless folks took offence to their confidence and independence. It was Harris's and Herbert's ignorance that was the issue. I sincerely hope that if any good comes from Sophie's death, it's that we shouldn't judge a book by its cover, and that diversity is a wonderful thing. To quote my daughter, when she was just 5 years old, the world would be so boring if we were all the same. What I want people to remember of Sophie is her strength and courage to stand up for the man she loved. I doubt she thought twice when she knelt beside him and refused to move. To her, it was the most natural thing in the world to show compassion and love. If you want to learn more about the work of the Sophie Lancaster Foundation, or you wish to show them your support, please visit their website at www.sophielancasterfoundation.com. And please, if you have been a victim of a hate crime, do not suffer in silence. If you're in the UK, please call 101. Or if it is an emergency, ring 999. You can also get support. You can also report to True Vision Hate Crime Reporting, Stop Hate Crime UK, and Crime Stoppers. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. The next episode will be out next Sunday. So in the meantime, keep an eye on those shadows.